And now, the podcast that makes a gross noise when you step on it, Unsquish the Fish, with your host, Ron Caniff.
Hello, Dolphins fans, and welcome to Unsquish the Fish. This is a football fan podcast devoted exclusively to the fans of the Miami Dolphins. On today's show, we will be talking about our 2015 defensive roster, as well as a little bit of breaking news on the Deflategate situation and how that may impact our team if it does at all. So without any more ado, I am going to bring in my first guest, one of my best friends in the world, Mr. Keith. Mr. Keith, sir, you are on.
What's going on, Ron? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for coming on the first show.
Just to give you guys
a little bit of information, the conversations me and Keith have had over the years is pretty much the inspiration for this show. Me and him have had a whole lot of crappy late night, overnight jobs where we were just sitting there talking on the phone for like seven straight hours talking about the Dolphins. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about why you're a Dolphins fan, how long you've been one?
I've been a Dolphins fan all my life. I was brought up in a Dolphin home. I started out 3 or 4 years old with, you know, Dolphin attire and football outfits that were Miami Dolphins. My dad was a big Dolphin fan. I used to sit and watch the games with him all the time, and it stuck throughout the years, and I'm 39 now and still love the Dolphins, love Sunday afternoons, love football season, get excited about it every single year.
Sweet, man. I know that right now, unfortunately, you are currently living where?
In Nashville, Tennessee.
And what the heck are you doing, hardcore Dolphins fan, in Nashville, Tennessee?
I'm trying to spread the Dolphin love up here, man. You know, these guys up here, all they got's the Titans. So it's like, I kind of feel like I'm left out on an island by myself up here.
At least you're not in Boston.
Amen to that.
Game changer.
Game changer.
Just to give everybody a little bit of background on that game changer, last year when we were at the season opener against the Patriots, there was a guy sitting in front of us, and he was a typical loudmouth, drunk Patriots fan. Is there any other kind? And he was just being absolutely rude, annoying, looking back at us. And I have to say, unfortunately, we were two of, in a sea of like 50 Patriot fans, which is ridiculous. It's not like we were in Boston, but it felt that way. But he was being a jerk. He was being rude. Of course, we had turned the ball over three times in the first half, and he was shoving it in our face. Then as we start to come back, all of a sudden we had this really nice drive, and a touchdown got called back, if I remember correctly. Do I have this right so far, Keith?
Yes, you do.
Okay. A touchdown got called back on some kind of holding penalty. I think it was on Lamar Miller, if I'm not mistaken. I can't exactly remember. And we didn't end up getting the touchdown. We had to kick a field goal. And he was like, that's a game changer right there, man. That's going to game changer. I was like, oh, I was started really getting mad. So then as the game was progressing in the second half and we were kicking their tails, every time we would do anything, I would just look right at him and be like 2 inches away from a game changer. He finally left before the game was over, which was great. And his friend was next to him. He could see that I was starting to get more and more irritated with him. And he was being more and more of a jerk, so he was trying to kind of have some friendly conversation with us. Oh, it's a great game, isn't it, man? And I could tell. I was like, okay, he's trying to smooth things over. It's all good. It was pretty funny, though.
If I'm not mistaken, also in that game, didn't that guy halfway through the – no, it was towards the end of the third quarter. Did he get up and leave or change seats?
No, he left. He left at some point. I thought it was more in the fourth quarter. I can't remember. I was having fun while we were kicking that hiney.
Oh yes,
and that was a good game. Didn't really quite end up the same for us as for them for the season, but we didn't know that during that
we
moment.
We had game one. That's what mattered. It made my trip from Nashville, Tennessee to Miami worthwhile.
Yeah, that's true. And just to give you a little bit of Keith's true fandom or his true obsession with the Dolphins, he actually drives down here and goes to practices with me, not the game.
We're talking about practice.
Yeah, he'll come down and check out practices with me and come down and go to games, so nobody can question his hardcore fandom. All right, man. Well, we were just talking about the Patriots, and I had no intention originally of talking about this, but since the Deflategate news just broke, it appears that they're not really giving the team much fault, except for maybe not necessarily making all the evidence available they wanted, but they are definitely saying Brady knew, was likely to know, which in their mind, this isn't a court of law, so in their mind, most likely knew, or it is a likely chance knew, that's guilty. That means he's considered guilty, according to them. In previous instances where conduct came up or rules violations came up, that was enough. It was enough for the Ray Farmer issue with the texting in Cleveland, and it was enough with the situation that just happened in Atlanta that took away their pick, and this is considered a more heinous violation. So what are your thoughts on the whole Deflategate and the news that just came down?
I mean, in all honesty, are we shocked? Are we really shocked? This isn't the first time we've heard this about the Patriots. You know, it was back with Spygate. I mean, think about it. It's like every time you turn around, you're hearing something about the Patriots doing something that's questionable, suspicious. It just, in my opinion, it makes me wonder how many of these wins are legitimate wins. What has the NFL not caught? And I'm probably one of the biggest Patriot haters out there, as are many Dolphin fans, but how many times does this go on before the NFL actually does something to the Patriots? That's what I'm wondering. That's actually my thought, is how many times does this happen where something's questionable, and next thing you know, you hear about it for a little bit, and the next thing you know, it disappears, and you don't hear nothing else about it.
Well, this is where I'm nervous. The last time that they had a major violation was obviously the Spygate situation. And yep, that ended up, well, the violations ended up making them very angry, and you saw what they did in 2007 to take it out on the league. They did everything they could to go 16-0, for one, which what team isn't trying to go 16-0, mostly, except for 7 straight years of the Colts with Peyton Manning deciding to just, we don't want to go 16-0. And then they only win one Super Bowl when they were like 14-2 every year.
Right.
But if you remember correctly, it wasn't just about going 16-0. It was the way they did it. They were running up the score. They were mad about the Spygate situation. And let me tell you this. If they decide to suspend Brady even a game or two, I have this feeling you're going to see that same situation. They are going to be in games up 3 touchdowns with 4 minutes left on 4th down, throwing the ball into the end zone, just like they did last year. And it's the only reason Brady threw that 50 touchdowns anyway, which I'm so glad isn't the record, because I always thought that record was bullcrap for the fact that the two previous guys, Peyton Manning with 49, Dan Marino with 48, when they were up by 3 touchdowns in the 4th quarter, their butts were sitting on the bench. They weren't out there up 3-4 touchdowns, throwing it into the end zone on 4th down, and then the coach comes out, oh, you know, we're going to give you a chance to stop us. You know, oh, whatever. Anyway, I don't want to spend all show on this crap. They always cheat. They always try and find ways to cheat. I'd love to know how long they've been doing this little scam with the balls. And obviously what I don't understand is they didn't need it. They brought the correct balls in the second half. He was even better in the second half. They had the correct balls in Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl. I'm sure he doesn't need it, but why do they always have to try and cheat? Or are they just worse at cheating than other teams because they always get caught? I'm not really sure.
Well, that's one thing that you always hear also as well. There's every team in the NFL does something to cut a corner or something like that. Okay, well, that may be the case. You know, just like everybody says, every politician in Washington, D.C. is crooked. The problem is every time they do it, they seem to get caught, but nothing happens. And I'm curious to see what's going to happen with this, because exactly what you said, and you hit the nail on the head, if they're saying that basically Brady knew, he is guilty, okay, so what punishment is going to be passed down to him? What punishment is going to be passed down to the organization as a whole?
It isn't actually Roger Goodell that makes that decision. It's actually Troy Vincent and his boys. So that, should be even more interesting to see, especially because Troy Vincent was a Dolphin.
Absolutely.
Here's his chance. Stick it to him, Troy. Stick it to him.
Payback.
All right. Well, enough talking about good old Deflategate or whatever gate it is this time. Let's get into the Dolphins, man. Just quickly, what'd you think about the draft this past weekend?
I was impressed. I mean, I was very impressed. I like the picks. There are still some questions, obviously, that there always is after every draft, because you can't fill every hole or every question mark that you've got. You can't fix during the draft. I mean,
O-line.
But I mean, overall, I think Miami accomplished a lot with the draft. I think that they, well, actually through free agency and the draft, they solidified Ryan Tannehill's weapons. I mean, they really did. And I think that obviously this is Tannehill's year. I mean, Tannehill's got to step up. Tannehill's got to produce. He's got to do something. And the organization has given him the weapons he needs to do that, in my opinion. I think they've given him more than enough.
Yeah, I agree, except I'm still worried about the interior O line. But as of right now, Collins hasn't signed with a team yet, and I'm hearing that he may have some time before he will be able to sign, because the NFL is going to put pressure on teams to not sign until they know he's 100% clear. They don't want him being signed, and then all of a sudden it turns out it's another Aaron Hernandez situation or something like that. They don't want that. So as much as I'm sure, and at first I was like, why didn't teams just sign him, or why didn't somebody just draft the guy in the seventh round? It didn't make sense to me, and I'll bet they were probably asked nicely, or encouraged, I should say, not to draft him and not to sign him until he's totally clear. But it was interesting to see the Dolphins send players out, his LSU boys, to come out and do an NFL recruiting trip or fact-finding mission. I've heard it called both from some of the pundits on ESPN, NFL Network, and whatnot. So, you know, last year, do you remember last year in the draft, who was my favorite? Who was my favorite man? The second they called his name, who was the guy I was just screaming about and so excited?
Jarvis Landry.
That's right. All right, man. I got my guy this year. That we drafted. Are you ready? Who you think?
Go ahead.
Who you think is going to be? If you had to take a guess, because we haven't actually talked about it. Who you think is going to be?
Actually, you know, since we haven't talked about it, I'm leaning towards the running back from Boise State.
Oh, you stole my thunder, man. That's it. How did you know?
Well, I have known you for quite a long time. And besides that, I think that when we picked that guy, the first person that he reminded me of, this is just my take on him, watching film, looking at numbers, he reminded me of a smaller Ricky Williams.
Oh, dude, that's exactly what I thought, too. That's exactly what I thought.
Powerful runner, doesn't shy away from contact, north and south. He doesn't try to go around things, and he's got decent speed. If I'm not mistaken, I think he at the combine, he ran, I forget what it was, a 4.5.
I did not even look at his actual straightaway speed. I mean, Jarvis Landry ran a 4.7, and that didn't seem. The only thing that did was make sure we got him in the second round instead of having to get him in the first. That's all that did. It didn't really mean anything. A lot of times in the NFL, straightaway speed's important, but it's straightaway speed isn't football speed. We've seen that more and more or not. But I'm just gonna wrap this little draft talk up real quick, because we'll get more into him on our next episode when we do the offensive roster breakdown. But yes, it's Jay Ajayi. That's going to be tough to say, but did you know he's British?
I had no idea.
Yeah, he's British, and he kind of has that little bit of a muddled British accent, but I was just imagining when he scores a touchdown, it's like, goal, instead of saying touchdown.
Nice,
Or when he scores a touchdown and ties the game, it'd be like, it's Ajayi in for the equalizer. I don't know, just soccer.
Game changer!
And actually, he's a big soccer player, and he had a decision whether to go overseas and play soccer or stay here and enjoy that American life, and he thought he was going to be drafted, say, second round, third at the latest. I don't even know that if he had known that he'd been drafted that late, fifth round, if he'd even stuck around and just gone and played soccer. I'm not really sure.
The information that I heard about this kid is, you know, he was projected to be a second-round pick. The only issue, the question they had, was the knees. The knee, I think, they mentioned something about the knee being just, there's like basically bone on bone. There's no cartilage there. So how dependable and durable is he going to be for the season?
Yeah, I'm hearing that he might be just literally a one-contract guy. Like 3 or 4 years, one contract, and then he maybe loses effectiveness because of those knees. But we're going to see. All right, man. Going to bring it to the defense now. How you want to do this? You want to go it by unit, or you just want to throw out some players? What are you thinking?
Well, let's go ahead and break down the defense unit by unit.
Okay, cool. All right, let's do that. All right, what unit you want to start with? I'll let you pick.
You know what? I think we're going to have to go with the bread and butter of that defense, which is going to be the D-line.
Okay, cool. All right, so we brought in Sue. Right. Let's just go our starters. Let's start with our starters, our projected starters, which there's one question mark. You got Sue, who's probably the best defensive tackle in the NFL, and
agreed.
Likely a future Hall of Famer at that position, I'm thinking.
Agreed.
You've got Wake, you got Vernon, and then you got either Mitchell or Phillips.
Or Phillips.
Probably one of those two guys I'm envisioning. I wouldn't imagine that over those two guys, A.J. Francis or Anthony Johnson, could leapfrog and start unless there's an injury or something. What do you think of our D-line, man? How do you see it comparing to the other D-lines in the league?
On paper, I've got to say that our D-line is probably going to be one of the best in the league. Those front four are just going to be nasty. I mean, just straight nasty. You've got Sue, Cam Wake. I mean, and we were talking about this a little while ago. Who do you double team? I mean, who do you double team on that defensive line? Because you got to double team Wake, because when you don't, you see what kind of success he's had. Sue, he calls for a double team on every play. Okay, well, then you've got Vernon. There was teams that were actually double teaming him last year, mm-hmm, because of the penetration he was getting into the pocket. So who do you don't have enough people on your line to double team everybody?
Not on the line. It forces, if you're going to do two double teams, it absolutely forces you to not only say you're going to double team Wake, to not only have to go one on one with Vernon, but also if you're going to double team Wake and Sue, you have to either leave in a running back or leave in a tight end. Or do both, and that starts to degrade the effectiveness of your offense if you have to continuously leave six and seven people. And so I think you're right about that. Just having Sue soaking up one just almost guaranteed double team every time, and if you don't, you're probably going to regret it.
Instantly
makes our defense better because it puts pressure right in the face of the quarterback. Now, we know that Earl Mitchell is just – he's just all right. He was one of the starting two last year with Randy Starks that was just getting shredded towards the end of the year. And that's the reason they went and they said, we're going to fix that running defense. There was two things last year they needed to go fix. They were the number one team in red zone trips in the NFL, but they were not number one in scoring. I think they ended up 11th in scoring or something like that. I'm not even sure. That may even be incorrect. Maybe it was lower. And they were getting gutted up the middle trying to stop the run. And you have to say that two things they went to try and fix, they did everything they could do to fix it. They went and tried to find people that could run routes that Tannehill threw so they could score more touchdowns when they got in the red zone, and they got Sue, and they went in probably the least likely position you'd think they'd draft that high. They went and drafted Jordan Phillips.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the teams that, if I remember the season correctly from last year, which I do because it's still a little painful, is down towards the stretch, the end of that season, I mean, we had teams like, you know, Buffalo absolutely destroyed us. We couldn't stop the run for anything. And I mean, they were, I mean, teams were averaging anywhere between, in some cases, 6-7 yards a carry, right up the gut. Now, I'm not a math wizard by any stretch of the imagination, but 6 or 7 yards on two plays, you get a first down by your second down. You're not even getting a third down.
Yeah, that's good math right there. You got it.
You know, you're not even getting a third down. So you don't even have blitz packages that are coming in on third down to try to get to the passer. You're not putting them in third and long position because they can run on you all day long. All day long. One thing I do like about what they did with the defensive line is, and I hate to go back to the Patriots, but they're obviously our nemesis in the AFC East. They are. Okay, they're the ones we compete with every single year that we just can't seem to – we can't seem to knock them out both times. We'll get one game on them. But they play an offense of quick slants, running backs coming out of the backfield, tight end, double tight end set. With that defensive line, it's going to be extremely difficult, very difficult, to have a running back coming out of the backfield or a tight end breaking off the line to go challenge our linebackers for Brady to throw to. It's going to be very difficult.
I think which it all, then is oh, going to, go ahead, keep going.
No, which then it's going to come down to, you know, our corners. But our linebackers, I feel, are actually going to be able to roam a little bit. And I know I'm going ahead to another area of the defense, but that defensive line is going to open up so many things for that defense. Blitzing from the linebackers, blitzing from the cornerbacks. I mean, it's going to be a way for our defense to really get some pressure on the quarterback, which is what they've lacked in the past few years, to be honest.
Yeah, and what I like is that we maybe will get to blitz a little less. Not necessarily that's a good thing, but perhaps we get to blitz with less players. When we can blitz with 5 and not have to bring the whole house, and it's a lot more effective to blitz with 5 and leave more players in the defensive backfield.
But definitely.
I do have a question, though. When do you think Wake starts to break down? Because we know it's coming, and I don't know who the guy is that, I mean, could you think, okay, let's say Wake breaks down, he's less effective, or something happens. Let's knock on wood, but let's just say he's less effective. Let's just leave it at that. And it's Derek Shelby and Olivier Vernon. How does that feel? Do we think that dramatically downgrades our D-line, or do we think it's still pretty strong if those two are sitting on the ends instead of Wake?
I mean, in all honesty, if you lose Cam Wake, it's going to drop the effectiveness of your defensive line. If you lose a Cam Wake, your defensive line is not going to be the same. It's just not. Do I think it'll drop us to the point where our defensive line becomes a weak link? No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
No. I'm just wondering if it would still be a top 2-3 if Wake isn't on the line or Wake isn't performing how he's performed in the past.
I don't see it. I don't see it being a top 2-3 without Cam Wake. I still see it being a top 10, absolutely. But I think it drops more on the lines of maybe a 6-7, top 6 or 7 top 7 defensive line in the league. I don't see how you can lose a player with the caliber of a Cam Wake and expect to stay up there in your top 2 or 3 defensive lines in the NFL. I just don't see it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree with you. But I mean, there hasn't been a sign that he's slowing down. He still seems pumped up, ready, still seems to work hard. He did have a little bit of an injury he was struggling through 2 years ago, but last year he came back and he was still very effective. Obviously, he receives a lot of double teams, which he's honestly just going to receive less of now. If you block with 5, if you just leave 5 linemen in, the double team's likely going to Sue, and that is going to allow the other 3 to go one-on-one. The other defensive tackle, whoever that is, which I'm really hoping Phillips, just based off size and potential right now, but of course as fans we always are hoping the guy we just drafted is going to just come in and dominate. I'm no different, and I'm hoping that it would be, because I can envision. Now, maybe I'm stepping out a little here, but imagine, let's be in Shangri-La. Imagine Phillips really works out. He comes in, and he is that beast. He is that run stuffer that we envision. Phillips and Sue, to me, that reminds me of Bowens and Gardner back in the day. Remember those days? I don't know if anybody remembers when we had the two tackles, Bowens and Gardner, and our defense was just sick, man. Sick when we had those guys. So I could kind of see in us going back to that, and that made the other – that's part of what made Jason Taylor – helped make Jason Taylor effective. That's part of what made Trace Armstrong effective, and even Marco Coleman started to get in on it. And he was maybe considered even a little bit of a bust or a reach at the time, but he started to get on it and be more effective when those two were just clogging up the middle and you couldn't run on us. I remember teams were scoring, what, that 1 year, 11, 12 points a game? I mean, that was Baltimore Ravens territory at the time. That was a very, very good defense. I really think that the NFL fans of other teams, what have you, are sleeping on this Dolphins D. We can just clog up the middle like that. I see us being one of the top defenses in the NFL. I know everybody's talking about the Jets. Congratulations. You won the offseason Super Bowl. If I remember correctly, Tampa won last year's offseason Super Bowl, and they won two games. We won the years before offseason Super Bowl when we went and got Wallace and, you know, all that garbage that Ireland brought in, his swan song. Here, I'm going to really mess up your team before I go. Take all these guys. You'll cut these guys and you'll be paying for them for 3 more years. But winning the offseason Super Bowl doesn't impress me. I'm glad you got Brandon Marshall. Yes, he's a great talent. He's also been on 4 teams in 9 years. You tell me something's not wrong there. Something's wrong there. They got a brand new coach. It's Todd Bowles. Used to be a coach with us. Was our interim coach after Sperano left. We didn't give him a shot. Now he's got a shot and I'm glad for him. The biggest hit for us in that is that we lost our D-line coach to him, Casey Rogers. That's disappointing because he was a really good D-line coach, but he deserved his shot too. And he's going to go be the defensive coordinator, but they'll have growing pains. They don't have a quarterback. I don't believe Geno Smith is a quarterback. And I didn't mean to get onto a rant of the Jets, but just to bring it back to my point, I think our D-line, especially in the middle, has the potential to make this defense just top. I mean, we were top 1 or 2 most of last year. And the only one that was better than us was Detroit. And if I remember correctly, didn't Detroit have a guy named Sue? Yeah, he's on our team now. I don't see why this Dolphins defense can't be the best defense in the league. That's pretty much where I'm going to. I'm just going to say it. I personally think that when I look on paper with a couple things working, because of this D-line, the Dolphins can have the number one defense in the NFL. That's my opinion.
Oof. You know what?
I know things need to work out. Things always need to work out. Things always have to come together to have success in the NFL. I don't care who you are. I personally see on paper a couple things that we're missing. I think we filled, and that we can have the best defense in the NFL. What do you say when I say that to you? What do you say?
Well, I'm like you in the aspect of I think that there is a lot of things that need. There's a lot of oil that needs to be added to that engine in order to get it to run smooth. And I'll tell you this, cornerback worries me, and I know we're going to get into that later on. The secondary as a whole worries me.
We're going to get into it, but I totally disagree. I'm actually excited about our secondary. It's paper thin, I will give you. It is paper thin, but I think it can be very, very good.
Oh, and it can. There's no doubt it can be. I just don't, and maybe this is my skepticism, I don't see us having the best defense in the league just because of a defensive line.
Well, you're not a fan, and you need to get off my show. No, I'm just kidding.
I know I'm
stepping out. I know most people, even Dolphins fans, think I'm probably stretching it because everyone thinks, oh, the Jets. I think the Dolphins defense is going to be the best in the league. Just going to say it.
Well, I mean, and hopefully, you know something? I hope that you are right, and I hope I'm wrong. And, you know, If that is the case, I will be more than happy to come back on the show, and I will eat the biggest plate of crow that you can possibly feed. I just do not understand. I just don't know if they're going to have enough to be the best in the league.
All right, so before we move on to the linebackers, give me a number. What do you say? Where do you see them finishing for the year statistically, rank-wise?
I'm going to say number four. I'll say number four in the league.
That's still good enough to get deep into the playoffs. That's still that's still a championship caliber defense.
Barring that they stay healthy.
Well, yeah, everything I say is contingent on them staying healthy.
I would put them at a number four ranked defense in the league, and I'll take that all day because, like you said, that's AFC championship material. That could be Super Bowl material.
Yeah, for a top five defense is a championship caliber defense. And until we started gotten in the middle because, I don't know, Randy Starks took a break, Earl Mitchell started not performing, whatever the reasons were. I'm not a football expert. I just play one on the radio. Whatever the reasons were, I heard Miko Grimes. You know who Miko Grimes is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Brent Grimes' wife.
Yep.
Sorry, I had that right. Brent Grimes' wife, she's on 560 WQAM with Omar Kelly all the time. I listen to that show avidly. I've heard her say that guys started to give up. Of course, I don't really get that because 10 games into the season, we were winning and we were looking like we were thinking, okay, I think we're going to make the playoffs. So I'm not really sure why they gave up or they felt like they had to make plays they shouldn't be making. They didn't stay in their role. Whatever the crap excuses were, we were getting killed in the middle, and I think they fixed that, man. I really think that they fixed it this year, but let's move it on to the linebackers. Are you ready to move on to linebackers, or any last thoughts on the line?
No, I mean, there's not really much that you can say about the line. All you have to do is take those four names, stick them on a board somewhere, and it speaks for itself. I mean, there isn't anybody in the NFL that's going to argue that that's going to be one of the top defensive lines in the league.
I agree. Okay, so linebackers. Now, this is the question mark. You're making some weird faces there, dude. You okay? I know I didn't introduce this or say this before, but I'm actually doing FaceTime with Mr. Keith right now. I don't know. He's making some strange faces. I don't know if he's in pain or if he's thinking about the linebackers. Not sure what those phases are about. So.
A little of both. Okay. A little of both.
Okay, so how do you feel about our linebacking core?
I'm nervous, if I'm honest. I'm nervous. And the reason I'm nervous is because it seems to me that the past few years it's been our linebacking core that, in my opinion, has had the biggest letdown.
So you don't think the middle of the D-line getting shredded was the biggest letdown last year?
No, I agree. Well, I mean, once teams found out that they could run on us and it doesn't matter who's playing linebacker, but the biggest thing, for instance, and I have to stay in the AFC East because eight of our games out of the season are the AFC East.
Six of our games.
Well, excuse me, six of our games. I'm sorry.
Correct you on an obvious mistake, but, you know.
But New Orleans did it. The Patriots do it. They utilize their tight ends on our linebackers because our linebackers cannot cover when it comes to passing routes. They just can't. They haven't been able to. And in my opinion, that is the biggest concern that I have when it comes to playing teams like the Patriots with Gronk. I mean, how are we going to match up with running backs and tight ends?
How did we do it last year sometimes? I think I recall us using a guy named Deion Jordan, who is no longer in the picture. I really don't want to talk about that.
Don't even
that
get
guy.
Me started on that guy.
Honestly,
that guy.
I don't want to spend any thought on him anymore.
I have been in that guy's corner since the day we drafted him. You know that.
You still in his corner?
Listen, my towel is in my hand, and I'm ready to go ahead and toss it in the ring because I'm done. You know, I've defended that guy. I've sat there. I've even told you. that give the guy a shot. Give the guy a shot. The guy hasn't even played that many snaps. He's a freakish athlete. And just when it seems like the kid's going to come around, he's going to get in this year, it's like, are you kidding me right now? Seriously? So, and it's a letdown. To me, it's a letdown because we've talked about this before, about him having the same structure and frame as Mr. JT, Jason Taylor back in the day.
Yeah, that's what we thought at the beginning, but that never really panned out.
And that never panned out. And it's like you were talking about injuries to our D-line. I mean, if the guy would keep his head on straight, that's a guy you can stick in there, and you may not lose that much by losing a Cam Wake for a few games.
Yeah, so I think that statement is still based off what we thought he was and not what he actually ended up being. I just think he was a guy playing out of position. He was probably more always meant to be an outside linebacker, but in a 3-4 defense, which were a 4-3. So even if we moved him to outside linebacker, he's still playing out of position. He's not a D lineman in a 3-4. He's definitely not. He's not a D lineman in a 4-3. He's not an outside linebacker in a 4. And he's an outside linebacker in a 3-4, and we should have just traded him while he still had an ounce of value. But it was too late. But now we know why he didn't show up to the OTAs or to the workout. Now it all made sense. Now, and the players didn't even know. They were like, I'm sure why ever he's here, he has a good reason. Yeah, why is he going to bother to show working out when you know in a week he was going to be suspended for the year?
Right,
well,
right.
Let's move on to the linebackers that we actually still do have on the team. I'm most excited this year about... Okay, wait. I always make you guess because you got my Jai. I can't even pronounce his name. I like him so much. I can't even say his name. And so you got my one pick, the rookie I'm excited about the most. What linebacker do you think I'm most pumped about this year? I bet you're probably gonna get it right again. Do every time.
Honestly, this one you've got me stumped. I'll be honest. You have me stumped on this one. I don't know. I don't know who you're that excited about because I'm not excited about any of them at this point.
Oh, you what about my boy Chris McCain, man? Chris McCain, he's a beast.
Chris McCain. That would be the only one that I sit back and I say, you know what? I think we may have something with this guy.
I hope so, man. I'm less sure about it than I am with some of the other things I like to try and prognosticate on. I got to be honest with you. I'm just more kind of taking a shot on this one, but just from his limited work last year, I know he's raw and he's still got stuff to learn. And he was an undrafted free agent, rookie, whatever you want to call him, which really once they're on the team doesn't mean crap anyway. But I'm excited about his talent level. He just looks like he's going to be an awesome fit in this defense.
I mean, I hope so. And I mean, he would be the only one, like I said, that I would sit back and I would say, you know what, this could be the breakout linebacker that Miami needs. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm skeptical on that linebacking core only because our linebackers, like I said, have always been, not always, but the past few years have been our weakest link, in my opinion, on defense. You know, and I know you said, well, how about getting shredded right up the middle? Well, yeah, that's true. We got shredded right up the middle on the defensive line, but hence the name linebacker to back up the line. And they didn't even do that.
But now with the D-line fixed, in my opinion, it's fixed. I think just with Sue alone, forget even the Phillips pick. I think if you put Sue next to a guy like Earl Mitchell, and to me he's a guy, and let's say it's not him, let's say it was A.J. Francis, I think even he could have stepped in. It'll probably be Mitchell or Phillips, though. I think the D-line's fixed now. I think it allows these linebackers to roam free. And here's what I'm going to say about the linebacking core and why I'm more excited about it than probably most people. The reason I'm excited about it more than most people is last year, Misi was hurt the entire year. We saw him get hurt in the first game of the season. He got that ankle injury.
Yep.
Jelani Jenkins was just kind of thrown in there because Ellerby was hurt. Wheeler was hurt, Misi was hurt, and we were so scared about our linebackers last year. We were talking about how Wheeler was crap, Ellerby was crap, Misi isn't a middle linebacker, and then all of a sudden all three of them were gone. all three of them are gone, and we're playing the Patriots. And we're like, oh my, we got like Trusnick in there. We got this guy, this guy Jenkins that we didn't even really know a lot about. All we knew is all the media guys dogged him, said he was junk, that he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that. They played, man. He stepped up and played. Misi, we know, can play, and maybe he's not the number one middle linebacker. He's still more of an outside linebacker, and therefore we got to trust him, man. Obviously, Kevin Coyle likes him. You know, Philbin pounds on the table, will, you know, be run over by a truck for him. I think Jenkins is going to play better this year, and I think McCain's going to play better. What worries me the most about this unit is what happens if those guys go away. And I know that's what we thought last year, and we had some guys come in and step up and play pretty decent. But what happens? I mean, I look beyond that. I see Jordan Tripp. I don't know, man. He was a small school guy that we drafted, and I know everybody was hoping he was the next Zach Thomas, but I don't think we see that. I know it's still early. I'm not saying he's not going to be good. I'm not saying he can't play. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just thinking, can we rely on him to come in and play major snaps, multiple snaps in a game? I don't think so. He was lost out there last year. Let's see if this year is better. I see Kevin Shepherd, I think, has some talent, but I don't think we know enough about him as fans. I don't know. I think they left that unit the most thin of the entire team, even maybe interior guard. I mean, interior guard has a lot of questions. I don't know if it's as thin or as shallow, I should say, as the linebacking core. But I'm excited about the three guys that are looking like they'll be the starters, and I don't see how they're not going to end up the starters, honestly.
Oh, I don't see how they're not going to end up starters. But once again, and this is every year, though. If the injury bug bites our linebackers, you're absolutely right. What are we going to do? Who's going to step up and play major minutes in these major games against Baltimore, against Eli Manning, against Dallas? Who's going to step up against New England? You know, who's going to step up and be able to play these major minutes and contribute? And exactly what you said it perfect. Tripp looked like he was lost. He was wandering around like he was trying to find a specific aisle in a grocery store. It was nasty. And that may not necessarily be his fault. He was kind of thrown into the mix. But at the same time, if you're the one that's supposed to be stepping up if somebody goes down, you need to be prepared for that and ready to go.
Yeah, you shouldn't be on the team or in a position where you're going to play minutes if I mean, the NFL is injuries. I mean, you show me any team that can walk into training camp, almost any team that has a halfway decent quarterback and can escape the year without any kind of injuries. I'm talking even the nagging ones that take your guy that's good and make him 80%. Like, you show me that team, and I'll show you a team that's going to at least make the playoffs with an average quarterback. I mean, the NFL is injuries. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Keith?
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And that's one thing where if you're a second-string guy and you know that you're going to be the one that's going to be called upon to step in there, you need to know it's not just – a lot of times I feel like that some of the defensive players, even some of the offensive players that are on the second string, they don't treat it as if they're the backup quarterback, where you need to go in there, and when you go in and get your playing time because somebody goes down with an injury, you need to have it in your mind where when you step foot on that field, the team is not going to lose anything with you being out there.
Mm-hmm.
By knowing the playbook, by knowing what's going on, to know where you're supposed to be, what your assignments are, the A-gap, or what are you supposed to be doing? And he just tripped. I mean, and I'm not just picking on him. I'm not picking on him at all, actually. It's just one of those things where they didn't look prepared when they had to step in. Yes, against New England, first game of the season, I mean, the linebackers were like, holy cow, who are these guys? This is awesome. And, of course, the Patriots hadn't game planned for these guys, which I think had a lot to do with the outcome.
I mean, Jenkins didn't just hold his own. I mean, he shined. He shined a lot of the season. I know that there were games you could point to where you could say Jenkins was garbage in that game. But we also know specifically, even admittedly by the coaches, they put those defensive players in some of those games last year in positions they shouldn't have been in weird defensive calls. And I know this year they've committed to playing a simpler defense, And I like that. I think if you have better players, when you have Sue, you don't need to get complicated and super schemey. You can just line up and play football. And this year, that's their commitment to those guys. If they're going to do that, you're not going to see OV trying to cover a running back out of the backfield. It was some craziness like that. It was either a running back or a tight end. They had Vernon trying to cover against Kansas City last year, and he was just standing there like he got smoked. He's not supposed to be covering tight ends or running backs out of the backfield.
He's not designed to be running down the field, you know, covering a tight end that's running a 4.7, 4.8, you know, down the field. It's just it's not in his DNA makeup to be doing that.
All right, man. Anything you want to add about the linebackers before we move on to the secondary?
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, I am a little excited about some of the, and I know this section, I'm excited about some of the unrestricted free agents that Miami is going to be signing, according to some of the reports that I've read. One in particular that I am a little excited about is Hall from Penn State.
Yeah, I saw that too. He kind of topped the list when I read. At the time, it was about 9 guys that looked like we were going to be signing. I saw him at top of the list, and it was interesting to me that was the first thing they tried to go out and do was, we better go get linebackers because we only even have 7 on the team. I don't even think they can run camp with 7. Like, how are you going to have 4 teams? You don't even have enough for 4 teams. You need at least, what,
right,
10, 11, 12 guys
at least
to run camp. You got 7 right now, so you better go sign some bodies if nothing else.
I mean, I'm excited about that, and I'm hoping, you know, just to see what happens. A couple of the analysts said that, you know, he kind of reminded them of a Zach Thomas. He's got a motor that doesn't quit. He's undersized for a linebacker. But being Dolphin fans, we know for a fact that undersized linebackers, you know, Zach Thomas was undersized. Nobody wanted to give him a shot. And he's one of the best linebackers the Dolphins have had in the history of the team.
That's true. I know everybody points to that, but it was kind of an exception. Not necessarily the rule. I mean, one thing you can do, one thing I've just learned from watching, obviously I'm not a GM or anything. One thing I've learned from watching, I think I remember Parcells saying this, you can take a guy or two that's a little undersized or a little slower or what have you, or a little bigger, or a little smaller, or whatever it is that you are looking for from the prototype of that particular position. You can pick a guy here, a guy there. If you go and you get yourself 3 or 4 of those guys, now you know what you have. You have a bunch of linebackers that are slow and short or not as strong as they should be. Or you go and get a bunch of receivers that all run 4.7, even if they're all Jarvis Landry's, you know what you have? You have a slow receiving core. That's what ends up happening. So you've got to pick and choose. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm curious to see what happens with Meese at middle linebacker mostly. But I'm just going to wait and see because he was just injured all last year. So I'm gonna cut him some slack and see what happens.
It's gonna be nice to see him healthy, you know, be at 100% and coming out there just to see what he can do at 100%. Because, like you said, you know, he was injured most of the year. And I mean, I am excited to see what he can do because he has showed quite a bit of potential and promise. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, I'll keep my judgment for a later show on the linebackers. But I mean, we'll see what happens.
Okay, cool. All right, man, let's get into the secondary. Let's talk about the cornerbacks. You want to just kind of take them separately, cornerbacks and safeties? That sound good?
Yeah, that's fine. We can do that.
All right, man, so I'm just going to let you open it up. What do you think of our cornerback stash, if you will? What do you think of this group of guys?
Well, Grimes. I mean, do we need to say anything else? I mean, this guy is like a mini beast. I mean, he's like our own version of Skittles on defense. I mean, the guy will challenge anybody. He'll go after anybody. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, I'd consider him a lockdown corner.
No, I agree. He's a top 5 corner in the NFL. He's a lockdown guy.
I would trust him out on an island by himself all day long with some of the best receivers in the NFL. So there's not really much you can say about Grimes. I mean, he's done exactly what we've asked him to do. And more.
Yeah, he's been a lot better than I thought. I mean, I didn't know a lot about him when he came onto the team. I knew he was coming off an injury and that we were signing him to a 1-year deal. And that was pretty much That was pretty much all I knew, to be honest with you. He's exceeded everyone's expectations, I believe.
I totally agree. I mean, he's definitely, you know, fallen into the role of a ball hawk, in my opinion, on that defense as a corner. And like I said, if a game come down to one-on-one with Grimes, I'm confident. I really am. I'm confident that he's going to be able to make the play, no doubt. The other side.
That's the biggest question mark on this defense. That's the one position that I'm going to give you the choices right here. Here's your choices to possibly start opposite. And man, you're making that face again. Is it because you're not happy with the choices? I'm just messing with you. All right, I'm going to give you your options here. You tell me who you just want. It doesn't even have to be who you think. Tell me who you want. All right, so you got Taylor, right? You got Bryce McCain. That's the guy we signed from Pittsburgh, I believe.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
it was Pittsburgh.
You got Will Davis, who's was drafted with Taylor a few years back. You got a guy we recently signed from the Giants, Zach Bonin. Man, I'm butchering his name. I don't even know if I've actually heard
it.
Bonin. Okay, I don't even know if I've actually heard it pronounced out loud. You got Bobby McCain, who, if I remember correctly, you're going to talk a little bit about him here in a second. I'll let you speak to that here in just a second, because you told me something yesterday that was interesting about him. I didn't have a clue about Tony Lippett, which that's my curiosity pick of the draft, because nobody knew we drafted him to even be a cornerback. I was listening to the radio. I don't even know if it was the Finnsiders or if it was WQAM. I can't remember which it was. They brought an analyst on, a draft analyst, college football analyst, and he started talking about Tony Lippett. Oh yeah, and he caught 1,000 yards, he caught this many touchdowns, he did this, he did that, he's a good receiver. And we were like, we drafted him to be cornerback. That's what, I think it was Omar Kelly said that, and the guy was like, oh, I'm sorry. Meaning he didn't even know that's what we did. I think the guy played, I don't know how many snaps he played as a cornerback, but apparently it was just a small enough body of work that we're going to make him a cornerback, and he's not a wide receiver. I think that's, I mean, I don't know if you're doing that guy a favor or not by making him learn a new position at the highest level. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to come in and start anyway, but then you also have Sammy Seamster. So out of the guys I named, who are you thinking is going to be the starter opposite? Because I'll take one out of the mix for you. Our nickel cornerback to replace Jimmy Wilson as Bryce McCain, and he admittedly says that's his position of comfort. Yes, he can play the outside, but he's a nickel cornerback, and it's good. You need, in this league, you need three cornerbacks. You got to have three starting caliber guys. So who is it? Who do you think it's going to be?
There's a part of me that wants to say Davis.
I like Davis, but he's coming off that ACL, so I don't even know if he's going to be ready
and
to go.
And that's the only issue.
I don't even know if he'll be starting or playing by the first game.
I mean, the first name you mentioned, I believe, what was it, Taylor?
Yes.
I think it's going to kind of be one of those things of he's going to kind of be put in that position only because I think that's kind of the person everybody's expecting to be put in that position, to be honest.
He's got the most. I think he has the most skill and ability that he shows. The problem is just the health, man. He had the shoulder, he had the kidney thing. I believe he only has like 40% use of his kidneys or something to that effect on a permanent basis, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he came into the league, and it's part of why he went a little later. He was a first round talent, but his kidney issues have been a major problem. And I don't know if he can stay on the field. Will Davis can't stay on the field. It honestly might just be ended up being a default situation, and Bowden ends up being the starter. Because you know Kevin Quill, he ain't starting no rookies.
No, no way.
Even when we go to the D-line, let's say Phillips, I think I could see Phillips kind of fitting in spots, getting a lot of rotational work. But, like, he's not going to start Phillips. He's not starting McCain, and he's definitely not starting Lippett. I mean, Lippett's He's I don't know what you want to call it, a project, if you will. He's a project player. You're going to be trying to teach him. I mean, he may end up just being a practice squad guy. We don't know. It's probably going to end up being Bowden if Taylor can't stay healthy.
And I mean, I think that's going to be one of those things where it's going to be more of a comfort thing because he's got some experience. He's got some, you know, NFL experience in the secondary playing corner on, you know, a lot of these receivers. When most of the other people besides Taylor and Davis who can't stay healthy, you know, don't really have a ton. I mean, Bryce, yeah, he does. But like you said, you know, at the beginning, his comfort level, it's not being out on an island by himself all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you put him in there and put him out of his comfort level because we've kind of seen when players have been put in a position where they weren't really comfortable playing that position, what can happen.
Yeah, bad things happen.
It gets very, very nasty very, very quickly.
That's when bad things happen to good teams.
Yes. So, I mean, Bauman or Bowman, you know, however, yeah, however.
We're such a knowledgeable quarterback here. We can't even pronounce half the team's names or teams, half the players' names. We're just, people are just shutting this off right now. Like, what is this crap? These guys don't know. These guys don't know what they're talking about.
But I think that you don't really have a choice but to put him in there just because of experience alone.
Yeah, I mean, he's not. He doesn't have a ton of experience, but I just think that's unfortunately right now. You never know once the game starts, once practice starts, once training camp comes. Somebody could blow you away. But right now, the biggest question mark on defense is that second cornerback spot and who's going to man it. Because I don't know. I feel confident about most of these other players and who's starting at least. I just don't have a clue on that one. But you did tell me something just a little bit. It was just a little bit of nugget of inside information about Bobby McCain yesterday that I had no idea about. So why don't you tell everybody about what you know about him? And well, I think I should say about a few more times when I just said that too. I think I said about 45 times. I'm going to say it about 45 more. All right, go ahead, man. Talk.
Well, working up here in Nashville, you get an opportunity to meet quite a few people. And I happen to have the privilege of working with his boy.
If I could interrupt for 2 seconds, just let everybody know if they didn't know that Bobby McCain is from that area, correct? And he played for Memphis. We drafted him out of Memphis.
He played for Memphis.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead now.
One of the guys that I work with actually grew up with him in Memphis. And he basically told me that a couple days before the draft, he actually talked to him. And surprisingly enough, rumor has it, that his number one pick of the team he wanted to go to was Miami. So that's kind of...
Why was it that he wanted to go to Miami so bad besides bikinis and South Beach?
Because his idol growing up and in college was Brent Grimes. And he had mimicked his play after Grimes. So I thought that was kind of cool. So, of course, me being nosy, having an inquiring mind, I want to find out about stuff. I start asking, you know, my coworker, you know, what about him? What, you know, what's going on? And he basically told me that this kid has a motor that is just non-stop. And hard hitter, ball hawk, extremely fast, a little undersized, and they said that during the draft. The analysts have said that he's a little undersized for a cornerback.
Yeah, but Brent Grimes is way undersized, and it doesn't seem to stop him.
Yes. Hence the reason, you know, I would think that maybe that's the reason that that's his idol, is because he kind of matched him so soft and stuff like that. Extremely fast, just has a good feel for the ball, very good feel for the ball. Which is obviously what you need as a corner. So, I mean, I got to admit, maybe it's because of a little bit of a personal tie here in Tennessee. But
there's nothing wrong with that, man.
It's one of those things where I'm excited about this kid, and I'm not making any prediction or anything like that, but I think that this kid is probably going to turn quite a few heads in camp. I mean, I honestly feel that way just from what I've heard. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm excited. I'm really excited about this kid. But then again, I was excited about Deion Jordan, too. So, with that being said, my excitement usually doesn't pan out too well. But we'll see what happens.
All right, man. All right, let's move on to the safeties. What do you think about our safety stash, our safety group?
Well, again, you know, Jones. I mean, Jones.
Jones killed it last year after coming back from the suspension.
Jones is just, he's one of those guys that he always seems to be in the right place. He always takes the right angle. I mean, I remember it was a few years ago.
Against St. Louis. Against St. Louis, right?
St. Louis. He
personally won that game for us, and no one talked about it. But he took two of the correct angles and had the speed and the ability to get just the right angle twice, and he was the reason we did not lose that game. And no one, if anybody maybe remembers, if perhaps you're a big Jones fan or you just have one of those memories, I remember, and no one talked about it, but he was the reason we did not lose that game against St. Louis a couple of years ago. It was a close game. They weren't a very good team, and we should have beat them bigger than we did. But I think it might have been 3 years ago or something, actually, on that. I can't remember, but that was when he had his really good year. But he had a really good year last year, too. Yeah, I like Jones a lot, man, and I think Adelmas did great last year when he was playing. But, again, he's another one that, is he going to stay on the field? And that was an issue with him when he was in Detroit, too.
Absolutely. I was just about to say he was injury prone in Detroit. If he stays on the field, me personally, I don't have any issue with that secondary. I don't have any issue whatsoever with Adelmas and Jones. I none at all. I'm confident with that. But the problem is Adelmas staying healthy. Jones, I don't really worry about. Like I said, Jones is Jones. I mean, that's just, he's going to do what he does. But Adelmas staying healthy kind of bothers me. And then who do we have to take his place if he goes down?
And that's where I say I think we're less than at safety than people think, because I actually like Michael Thomas. I know that Michael Thomas is famous for the one interception on Brady a few years back, but he's done a lot more than that for us. And I obviously he was coming off an injury. But let's face it, we just got decimated with injuries in the secondary. I mean, we were pulling guys off the couch to come start. And it's true. It's true. We were pulling guys off the couch to come play a secondary for us last year.
Michael Thomas and
Walt Akins, I don't feel horrible about those guys. And then we got Cedric Thompson, the rookie. I think that unit is better than people think. I don't think it's quite as shallow or as people have said over this offseason.
Well, I mean, that's true. And like you said, the injury bug that bit us in the secondary last year was just oh my goodness. It was like every time you turned around, we had somebody in the secondary going down. And it was like, are you kidding me right now? And like you said, we're pulling people off the couch. And, you know, when you said that, it kind of reminds me of, hey, you know, back in the day when we had Sperano, you know, we went down to one of the practices. It's like, we're pulling people that are going to practice out of the stands to say, hey, you want to come play safety for us? Why not? You know, we ain't got no healthy bodies. But I don't know. I just, so much is, it falls on the fact of if we stay healthy. I mean, the potential of this defense is very high, like you said at the beginning of the show. But I don't know, man. It's just, there's way too much weighing on the fact of it being healthy. And I just don't, that's what I don't see.
You're speaking of safeties in general, specifically?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we don't really have, in my opinion, we don't have anybody at safety that's going to be able to step up and fill a role like a Jones or even a Adelmas for that matter.
See, I think that Michael Thomas can come in and be solid and show that he can come in and just not make mental mistakes and do well. But I'm excited to see what Walt Akins will do. I'm interested to see him step in and play some more major minutes. I think that he could be – I think he's going to come up and surprise people this year and maybe even take take that job from Adelmas, especially if there's an injury and Adelmas is maybe slowed down from the injury or doesn't come back what he was because of the injury. I think Akins is going to surprise some people this year. I think he's aggressive. He wants it. He's working hard for it. I could see him doing more than people think. I think everyone's pretty much forgotten about him. I see him as kind of a dark horse.
Well, let me ask you this then. How would you rate our physicality for our safeties?
See, I think Jones and Adelmas and Akins are physical. I don't think Michael Thomas is physical. I don't know enough about the rookie Don Jones, Jordan Kovacs, I don't think any of those guys are physical. But if you just took those three, Jones, Delmas, and Akins, I think they are physical safeties. As physical as you're allowed to be anymore in today's NFL.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And I think it just, I don't know, maybe it was just me. It seemed to me like, I remember, of course, back in the day when you had safeties like Ronnie Lott and stuff like that.
Yeah,
where I mean,
Atwater, was that what his name from Denver? Oh yeah. My God, he would just kill people. Kill
you know,
people.
You could, and even Lynch.
Oh yeah,
Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Lynch.
You know?
I forgot about him. He was. He
you
would,
could
he
just
would kill
literally decleat people. I mean, and it was perfectly okay. You know, and I mean, I've seen some hits that some of these safeties have put on people. Where I mean. Some of these wide receivers and even tight ends for that matter, it's like they're searching for their cleats for the next week because they got knocked so far off of them. But I didn't see the physicality last year in our secondary.
See, I know. I see it though. That's interesting. I have to pay more attention to that this year to see. I see those guys being as physical as they're allowed to be. Yeah. I have to stress that as they're allowed to be with the current rules.
And maybe that's it. I didn't see as much physical play as I would like to have. But I mean, like you said, you know, the rules have changed, and now you know you have to do all these things to keep from hitting them, and which is causing players to pull up in the secondary from you know trying to dislodge the ball from the receiver, which is what their job is. You know, that's the way they're trained, is to dislodge the football.
The guys that are playing now were still trained that way. It'll be another 10 years, now 5 years maybe, probably another 5 to 6 to 7 years before we find guys coming in the NFL that have been, that they instinctually play under the current NFL rules and the way football is meant to be played, or not meant to be played, allowed to be played in the NFL currently. Everybody coming up still... they were taught to dislodge ball from man, and they've had more time to work on it, and they're younger, so teaching a young dog new tricks, I suppose, as to the people that were 30 years old and all of a sudden told, no, you can't do what you've done since you were 5 years old anymore.
Exactly.
You have to do this. So I think we still have some more years before that kind of levels out and everybody understands, and they kind of grow up playing that way, and then maybe even play better than some of the guys now because they learned it the way the NFL wants it.
And it is safer and everything. I just, like I said, I didn't see the physicality that I would like to have seen. You disagree. And maybe it is because of the fact that they, you know, the as physical as they're allowed to be nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think overall, last year was a little different, you know, but overall, I would like to see our defense get physical.
Now, I will agree, as a whole, and I always point to every time we play Baltimore, which seems to be one reason or another. I mean, obviously, we play them every few years anyway because of the way it rotates, and then this year, I think we ended up playing them for whatever reason, just the way the NFL schedule works out. We're playing them again. That's the most frustrating loss to me every year. That was the most frustrating loss to me last year. I literally turned off my TV. I couldn't bear to watch. I will admit it. I turned off the TV. I couldn't bear to watch anymore, and I was disheartened for a long time because I really thought we were a physical enough and tough enough team to finally go and lay it on Baltimore, and they did the same thing to us. They always do, man. But I have this feeling... like we got enough, I want to say enough dogs on this team. And I'm going to tell you what I mean by dogs. I think Wake is a dog, and Sue, he's a dog, man. OV's a great player. I don't know if he has that dog in him. We'll see. I think McCain, he's like a dog. You know what I mean?
I will agree.
I just think he's got that dog in him. I think Delmas and Jones both have that dog in him, and I really think Walt Akins does. I really think he's got that dog in him. So I think we have enough of those guys at enough positions that they can kind of get the rest of the defense thinking, I don't want to say dirty, but I mean, Sue, he's a great guy off the field. Everybody thinks, oh, he's such a bad person. No, he's like the nicest person in the world. Just on the field, he's an animal. He switches this into this mode. He becomes this Hulk, this beast. And a lot of these guys from last year, they didn't do that. But I think he can spark something in them. He's going to get them motivated. He's going to lead them to just be nasty. And if it means a couple extra flags or a couple extra fines, whatever, it is what it is, man. But that's what we need. That was the missing piece last year from the defense. It's just that nastiness. You get that nastiness instilled in some of these guys, and maybe it even bleeds into some of these other guys. Maybe Jenkins gets a little bit of that in him. Maybe, I mean, Misi's going to be a soldier. I don't ever see it. He's just going to be that soldier onward, do what Coyle and Philbin tell me to do, and that's it. But I'd like to see some of these guys just get a little nastier. And I think with Sue on the team, that can happen, and that's what's going to make our defense the best defense in the league. You're not going to be the best defense in the league being passive, even in today's NFL. I'll say even especially in today's NFL, you've got to find ways to be nasty and intimidating and make teams nervous about playing against you. And even as good as we were last year, teams weren't nervous to play us. I think now they might be, hopefully. That's my hope for the defense as a whole, and I think a lot of that's just going to stem from Sue. So I know we paid a lot of money for him. I think it'll be worth it.
I think, you know, it takes me back to a, you know, it was a while ago, you know, one of the first practices me and you ever went to. You actually made this comment, which was kind of funny, and now that I think about it, it kind of makes me smile, because you had made the comment, we had watched three fights break out at the practice we went to.
Yeah.
And you made the comment of, wow, they are more interested in fighting with each other on the practice field than all of last year fighting the teams that we played.
That's true.
And when you're all, you know, ready to fight and you're ready to throw down, but that doesn't translate onto the actual field Sunday afternoon, that mentality. I'm not a GM, I'm not a coach, you know, I'm not an analyst, but if you don't translate that onto Sunday afternoon, you're not going to win in the NFL. You're just not. Look at the dominant defenses in the league, in the history of the league. I have to go back to, you mentioned Baltimore.
Okay, I'll give you that. To me, they're the best defense to ever play. That's my personal opinion. They were the number one.
I look at the Steelers. I mean, are you kidding me? The Steelers, I mean, they would take your head off. And it was a nasty defense to where it seemed like teams would – now, this is obviously back in the day. This hasn't been here recently. But back in the day, you know, teams just – I'm not going to say feared, but there was a bit of mental lapse where teams were like, you know, I got to go play the Steelers. And it's like, you know – and, I mean, even – not to go away from the NFL, but even college. You've seen some college defenses that were just ridiculous. I mean, back in the day, the Hurricanes. Nobody wanted to play the Hurricanes because of their defense. Their defense was just nasty. And I would love to see our defense get like that. I think exactly what you said with the players we have on our defense right now that we're going to go into the season with, you have some of those players that are going to – they're going to get a little chippy. And maybe it spills over to some of those players that aren't as aggressive. We need them to be aggressive. Our linebackers, we need our linebackers to be absolutely just like nobody wants to go over the middle to catch. Nobody wants to hit a slant. Running backs, as soon as they pass the defensive line, if they get past the defensive line, now they're sitting there looking over their shoulder like, I'm going to get clocked by a linebacker. I mean, I long for that defense we had back in the day. Aggressive, hard hitting, get in your face. And we just haven't had that the past few years. And I think that's kind of hurt us. I mean, I'll be honest. I think it's kind of hurt us.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think that was the missing piece. If you asked fans last year about the Dolphins defense who were not Dolphins fans, and you say, oh, yeah, man, your defense is pretty good. And I'm talking about it more in the middle of the year when we were really clicking and we were one of the top ranked, statistically top defenses in the league. I think they saw the Dolphins as the Dolphins defense is pretty good. And I think everybody looks up stats. They look at the team defense and they see the Dolphins up there. Like, they were probably like, really, the Dolphins? And maybe they'd watch a game and you're like, yeah, they're pretty good. But it wasn't like when you were watching Seattle's defense. You'd be like, gah! Oh, man, it's like when you look at that team on your schedule and you see Seattle on your schedule, like, oh, man, we're going to get killed. As much as I think that other teams' offenses were impressed by the performance of the Dolphins, they would come up to him after the game like, wow, you guys did really good. I specifically heard, Mecole Grimes said this, that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers went up to the Dolphins players after the game and were like, wow, you guys are pretty good. But they didn't really know that going in because there wasn't that stigma. There wasn't that dog. But so to wrap up my point so we can wrap up the show, we need to be intimidating. And as good as we were last year, we weren't intimidating. Impressive, yes. Not intimidating. All right, well, we are going to wrap up this episode of Unsquish the Fish. Thank you very much to my guest, Mr. Keith. He is going to be joining me on the next show when we do the offensive roster review of the team. And also, we're going to tell a little story about the day me and him met Tony Sperano. Yeah, that's not an impressive story, just more of a funny one. If you would like to be on the show through FaceTime, Skype, what have you, please send me an email, unsquishthefish@gmail.com or unsquishthefish@yahoo.com. If you want to like my Facebook page, it's unsquishthefish. And of course, my Twitter handle is @unsquishthefish. Again, my name is Ron Caniff, and thank you very much for joining us today.